What forms the might of the Imperium of Man? Is it the wisdom of its bureaucrats, capable of organizing the supply lines for troops, even in the most distant corners of the galaxy? Certainly. But victory cannot be achieved by this alone. The courage and selflessness of the warriors of the Imperial Guard and Adeptus Astartes, undoubtedly, though these brave sons of humanity can tip the scales in their favor even in the most hopeless battles, rarely do they change the course of the war as a whole, for it is most often done by the Imperial Navy. Moreover, it is their ships that are the first to meet the enemy at the threshold, and they most often put the final victorious punctuation in the majority of conflict. In many ways, thanks to these ancient steel giants the size of hive cities, humanity continues to fight for its future in the cold void of space. To the ordinary citizen of the Imperium, who has spent their entire life on their home planet, even a small frigate can impress with its size, not to mention the true leviathans of the fleet. These are some of the most ancient and powerful ships, the Emperor-class battleships. Across the expanses of the galaxy, one can encounter many subtypes and modifications of this model. They can vary in size, armor, and armament. All this depends on the time and place of construction, as well as the purpose for which a particular representative of the class was built. What remains constant is that they are all pinnacles of engineering thought, embodied in millions of tons of plasteel. The dimensions of the battleship are mind-boggling. The distance from bow to stern is at least 8 kilometers, and the width is 1 kilometer 200 meters at its widest point. In essence, it is a town, laid out over several levels and stretched in length. For the full functioning of such a giant, a crew of 250,000 people is necessary, ensuring not only the proper operation of all the ship's systems, but also maintaining an acceptable standard of living for the people aboard. And this is only the main crew, excluding the thousands of soldiers that the ship can transport to a crusade's target within its living quarters. If from the outside, the battleship resembles a massive Gothic cathedral, creating the impression of something cumbersome, impractical, unwieldy, and at the same time excessively majestic and pompous, its internal layout is the complete opposite of the ship's external appearance. The creators of this type of battleship seem to have done everything possible to avoid the useless waste of even a cubic meter of space inside the armored hull. And this can be confirmed if one takes a closer look at the main sections of the ship. The top of the ship is crowned with a massive superstructure in the shape of a cathedral dome. In this superstructure is located the command deck and its main part, the captain's bridge. Such names were given to these sections by their ancient predecessors, the sea vessels of ancient Terra, although externally they no longer bear even a distant resemblance to them. Now, it is not just a small part of the upper deck, the size of a few cabins, but a complex multi-level structure consisting of several dozen different rooms with various purposes. Conventionally, they can be divided into three groups: living quarters, common areas, and bridge rooms. In the living quarters of this part of the ship reside the senior officers' captains. The designers ensured that each of them would have the utmost comfort. For instance, the captain's quarters, or rather a system of several quarters in terms of size and opulence, can rival the residences of most mid-rank officials. It is no wonder, since sometimes the ship may not be commanded by ordinary captains, but by high-ranking figures of the fleet. So the conditions in these living quarters must correspond to their status, and you can meet anyone in the corridors of this section. For example, the Lord Admiral himself, commander of a whole sector's fleet. Sometimes he may need to personally lead one of the fleets, and naturally for his residence he would choose the largest and most powerful ship, which is usually a battleship. Although more often it will be run by officers with the rank of admiral, vice-admiral, or even captain. The captains of the Imperial fleet are the masters of everything on board their ship. These are iron-willed people, detached and uncompromising, bearing immense responsibility for the ancient war machine and the hundreds of thousands of people on it. But a single captain could never handle his duties alone. For this, he has an entire staff, consisting of numerous junior officers. The next in rank after the captain is the lieutenant. This officer serves as the commander's deputy, They are responsible for various ship systems, astro-navigation, engines, boarding crews, gunnery deck, and many other systems. Lieutenants also make up the numerous teams working on the bridge of the battleship. Additionally, the rank of lieutenant is given to the pilots of strike ships, who serve as squadron leaders. It is believed that a lieutenant possesses true potential and the opportunity for further advancement up the service ladder of the Imperial Fleet. After the lieutenant comes the rank of midshipman. It is the lowest officer rank in the fleet. Midshipmen are actually better called cadets with officer ranks. Formally, they enjoy the respect of an officer, but they are still undergoing rigorous training to become true officers, and the performance of most of their duties is part of the training process. They are even housed separately from the rest of the officers. Their quarters are located somewhere in the middle section of the warship, away from the command bridge. Of course, the captain's aides and senior officers settle for more modest conditions, but even these allow them to feel relatively comfortable. The mid-level command staff occupies the lower level of the command deck and is content with ordinary cabins. Although these living quarters are far less luxurious and comfortable, they are still a head above the cabins and bunks where the rest of the battleship personnel have to squeeze in. Common areas, for example, include the strategium, usually located not far from the captain's quarters. It is in this majestic room, equipped with an enormous number of monitors, holo projectors, and a giant table, that meetings and councils of the high-ranking officials not only of the Imperial Navy, but also of other organizations such as the Astra Militarum or the Inquisition, are held. Therefore, the room's decor must necessarily reflect the status of the individuals who come to confer within it. Perceiving the true distance that the ship is destined to traverse, every captain understands the amount of time he will spend en route languishing in idleness. Thus, he makes considerable efforts to replenish the ship's library, where time can be spent. On especially ancient vessels that have been in service for millennia, the library can house ancient and rare tomes that perhaps most scholars would sell their souls to obtain. Moreover, almost every ship of this type has a hall for ceremonial gatherings. Richly adorned with high ceilings and magnificent acoustics, it bears witness to hundreds of celebrations marking great victories in various campaigns of the Imperium. But of course, these and other previously mentioned rooms are secondary. Their importance does not compare to the main section of the command deck. The captain's bridge is the key part of the ship, its brain. Just as a human body cannot exist without a brain, neither can a vessel. It is from the captain's bridge that all orders and commands are issued. Essentially, it represents the most complex system, consisting of a symbiosis of man and machine, both in a literal and figurative sense. At the head of this system is the captain in his captain's chair. From it, he can observe the battle and directly command the crew's actions without the slightest delay. A vast number of personnel, located nearby behind countless stations, assist him. The coordination and speed of all these individuals' work determine how quickly the captain's orders will reach the subordinates, and how promptly the captain, in turn, will receive data on the ship's and its crew's condition. In large part, this is the most vulnerable area of the ship, for its destruction would likely take the battleship out of the fight. No less important is the external part of this section. It is literally covered with various antennas and transmitters that receive and send information. Thanks to these installations, the ship can navigate real space. These complex structures, resembling Gothic spires weighing several tons and entwined with cable vines, resemble the dense jungles of Catacan. They are known as auger lines, both small and large. If a vessel loses them, it will not only become mute and deaf, but also practically blind. One level below the command deck are the living quarters of the enlisted personnel of the Imperial Navy. In terms of comfort, they are significantly inferior to the living quarters of the junior officers, yet they still resemble living quarters more than barracks. There you will find representatives of several other professions and ranks, and among the most frequently encountered will be the warrant officers. Warrant officers are also known in some circles by the archaic term boatswains. They act as equivalents of non-commissioned officers, such as sergeants and corporals in the regiments of the Imperial Guard. Their duties include conveying the orders of higher-ranking officers, overseeing the implementation of those orders by the enlisted personnel and maintaining discipline through regular floggings. This group of individuals is crucial to the ship. With even the most mutinous crew, any captain can effectively manage them by relying on dependable boatswains. Most of them are appointed from the ranks of well-performing enlisted personnel. But it is also a practice to recruit this part of the ship's crew from Imperial worlds. Among the warrant officers, there are narrow specializations, for example, the gunnery captain, a highly respected non-commissioned officer entrusted with the significant responsibility of commanding one of the gun crews on an Imperial warship. The gunnery captain is the chief expert, ensuring all duties are correctly performed by the personnel under his command and that the entrusted gun is properly operated. For most enlisted members of the gun crews, it takes about 10 years to attain this undoubtedly important position on any Imperial ship. The Imperial Navy also has its sergeants, appointed to lead a detachment of armed men numbering from 6 to 20 people. Their task is to command this squad during boarding actions. Additionally, they are responsible for the keys to the weapon lockers, which are located in each sponson. When a battle begins, the sergeant gives the command to prepare for combat and starts arming the crew. Candidates for these positions are selected from among the sergeants of the Imperial Guard. This is done for two reasons. First, they already have combat experience, and second, they certainly will not have connections with the enlisted crew and are unlikely to side with them in the event of unrest on the ship. Another specialization among the non-commissioned officers is the bosun. These harsh individuals are the enforcers of discipline and overseers, keeping a close watch on the crew. The bosun is also responsible for distributing duties among the enlisted crew and ensuring their efficient execution. Naturally, this does not endear them to the enlisted personnel, which dooms them to solitude. Therefore, most often their only companions are the sergeants, who have similar responsibilities and are also not very popular among the enlisted personnel. The rank and file are the most numerous and important part of the crew on board the battleship. They perform all the menial labor, hauling shells and rockets, laying cables, clearing debris, and performing basic maintenance. The rank and file usually have numerous subclassifications that define their roles further. For instance, third-class gunners, second-class fuse changers, and so on. The rank and file form the bulk of the starship crew, pulling the weight of combat operations. Contrary to the popular belief, many of the Imperial Navy's rank and file are volunteers who receive decent pay and live in better conditions than on many Imperial worlds. However, if the battleship suffers significant personnel losses and there are not enough volunteers, the captain may decide to forcibly recruit people to replenish the crew by taking them from planets encountered along the route. In practice, this is often achieved through agreements with the local planetary governor, but essentially, the captain doesn't need anyone's permission to take a crew from any world. Such involuntary assistants may end up on the ship as slaves, tasked with performing unskilled heavy labor such as moving artillery into position, turning crankshafts, and transporting supplies, heavy equipment, and shells for the macro guns, all under the sound of an overseer's cracking whip. If one were to traverse the living quarters to the ship's stern, they would find themselves in a highly mysterious and sinister place for mere mortals, the astropathic chamber. This chamber, built in the shape of a spire at the ship's stern, is where the individuals reside, without whom communication with command across the galaxy would be utterly impossible. Given the truly vast distances involved, one astropath pair is not enough to transmit a message. Hence, every significant ship has an entire choir of such psychers at its disposal. Their work is coordinated by the Master Astropath, the most experienced practitioner of the ship's astrotelepathy. These areas bear a terrifying reputation among the ship's crew. Those unfortunate enough to be quartered near the astropathic spire begin to suffer from nightmares and strange visions. The most gruesome legends circulate about these vaults. The mere status of a mutant, albeit a tolerated one, provokes hatred and fear. And a mutant who affects your mind evokes horror and repulsion among most crew members. The chambers themselves are fortified to ensure that the astropaths' lives are not threatened, even if significant damage is inflicted on the astropathic spire. If the living decks collapse under the enemy macro gunfire like a fence, the reinforced astropath chambers will allow the precious mutants to be protected. The spire's construction and its secrets are meticulously concealed, even from the Adeptus Mechanicus. The final fitting of the chambers and the installation of most of the equipment are kept secret by the astro-telepaths. Nothing on the ship possesses such secrecy, except for one more place. Not far from the Chamber of Astropaths, one can find another enigmatic location where access is strictly forbidden to outsiders, the Navigator's Sanctum. This area is essential for every Imperial starship capable of warp travel. The construction of the Sanctum often varies greatly depending on the ship type. In some places, these are areas set up with utmost secrecy, similar to the Chambers of Astropaths by the Navigator houses, while in others, they entail far more grandiose efforts. The Navigator's habitat is his personal domain, usually designed as a spheroid with a diameter ranging from 2 to 10 decks. These closed-off realms are typically integrated into the framework of newly constructed human starships while they are still in their stellar dock. Often, these massive spheres are delivered to the spacecraft fully completed and ready to dock with the new starship by representatives of the noble Navigator House, which had pledged to guide the vessel. The installation of the sphere is also carried out by representatives of the house to ensure it remains untouched by the hands of ordinary shipbuilders. There are rumors that on some of the larger ships, which have voyaged through the void for hundreds of years, there are navigators who have never once dared to leave the confines of their sanctum. It must be said they have little need to, as the energy and utility systems adequately meet the needs of the sphere's inhabitants. In return, the navigators perform their duties flawlessly and without question. From the quarters of the regular crew, one can reach the gun decks by moving towards the bow. This undoubtedly crucial section of the battleship is crammed with a vast array of machinery, as it is from the gun decks that the ship's main armament is loaded and maintained. These decks are traversed by gigantic conveyor belts, and loaders operated by both servitors and humans bustle back and forth. During each battle, thousands of workers and sailors perform the arduous task of maintaining the guns in combat-ready condition. And the battleship's armament comprises hundreds of weapons of various types and sizes. Weapons batteries are generally the primary armament of most Imperial warships. Since each battery consists of many individual pieces of armament, whole sections of a battleship's hull can be covered in gun ports, launch systems, turrets, and housings for weapons. Behind each of these systems, there will correspondingly be a gun deck equipped with all necessary installations. The weapons used are incredibly diverse: plasma cannons, close-range missile launchers, laser guns, rail guns, thermonuclear emitters, and graviton pulsers. All of this can be found on Imperial warships. These batteries fire coordinated volleys to increase the chances of hitting the target and the amount of damage dealt. The greatest damage is often inflicted by macro cannons, which serve as the basic armament for Imperial warships. Rows of titanic weapons annihilate their targets with powerful broadsides and torrents of fire. There exists a large variety of weapon types, each specifically engineered for certain tasks. Most basic ammunition is produced by the ship itself. Many decks are filled with workshop sections. This is a forge where most of the catalog, additional parts, ammunition, and everything that often deteriorates and requires replacement is produced. The forges ensure the production of metal structures for the repair of destroyed decks, roll pipes, and can, if desired, construct an entire city. The production of various ammunition is what the forges engage in after each battle. There are different modifications of macro cannons. For example, a macro cannon designed to destroy a ship's power transmission system. This variant of macro cannon fires a shell made from highly charged ionized atoms of deuterium. These particles cause minimal physical damage to their targets. Instead, they are intended to overload and disable the power transmission systems of all target ships. This weapon is especially useful for vessels that need to capture their prey intact. The Hecuta Patton plasma battery is an ancient type of plasma macro weapon that redirects the power of a plasma explosion, concentrating it into a compressed photonic packet launched over extremely long distances. Unfortunately, this weapon is now rarely seen on Imperial vessels. The technology for producing such armament is now lost, and has reached the 41st millennium only on certain ancient representatives of the battleship class. Bombardment cannons are devastating weapons intended to turn planetary defenses into ruins and support military landings. Most often, the Imperials use linear accelerators to launch massive volleys of warheads from heavy magma bombs. And although they have relatively short range, they can also be used in space. Often just rumors of a battleship entering orbit and the presence of this type of armament is enough to make any adversary quickly surrender. Next come the lances, another Imperial weapon capable of directing energy of extraordinary power. Lance batteries are essentially giant laser weapons, usually installed in a large and heavily armored turret. Thanks to energy supplied by a plasma reactor, a lance can fire long bursts instead of the short shots of portable laser weapons. Often a bright beam of coherent light connects the weapon to its target, hence the name lance. Lances employ triply or even quadruply repeated energy projectors that focus their power into a concentrated beam capable of burning through even the thickest armored hulls and slicing small vessels in half. Lance batteries can be used either for applying continuous firepower at a precise point on the target or by slightly shifting the projector to bombard the target. Several batteries often combine these two modes of firing in hopes of overcoming the void shields of their victim and inflicting massive damage. Many types of lances include an installation called the Divine Lance, which is also one of the rarest archaeotechs. This type of laser weapon represents an elongated focusing apparatus and four lens matrices, endowing the weapon with exceptional range to the extent that beam dispersion becomes an issue. The technological requirements demanded by this weapon are very high, and only the ancient ships of the most powerful battle fleets possess the structural requirements for their installation. Another subtype of energy weapon is the laser burners, reduced versions of lances, using focused high-power laser beams to penetrate the armor of a starship. The relatively small size of these weapons allows them to be used in boarding actions, concealing the outer adamantine hull to enable the weaponsmiths to gain access to the vital compartments of the enemy. Recently, new developments from the Mechanicum have also been encountered on ships such as the hybrid lance weapon modeled after Mizoa, although this development from the forge world of Mizoa remains quite controversial in the circles of the Imperial Navy. This is because, in this weapon, the range was significantly reduced in favor of increasing potential damage through the integration of the emitter into the lance's structure. Therefore, captains of some ships complain that the reduced range requires changes in ship-to-ship combat tactics. Speaking of battleship armament, one cannot fail to mention torpedoes. Torpedoes are massive self-propelled ship-to-ship missiles. Despite the high maintenance costs, this weapon possesses significant destructive potential. This is known not only by the captains of the Imperium, but also by their adversaries, who therefore try in every way to evade their strike. This gives Imperial fleet commanders the opportunity to use torpedoes not only to inflict damage, but also to force the enemy to maneuver and move in a specified direction. The most common forms of torpedoes used on battleships are from 300 meters in length and contain both a powerful warhead and a short-lived plasma reactor, similar but less stable than those used in starships and Titans. Each torpedo is constructed in such a way as to quickly accelerate out of its launch tube into the void, rushing straight at the enemy. As soon as the machine spirit detects a target, powerful maneuvering thrusters adjust the torpedo's course for interception. Unlike weapon batteries and lance strikes, torpedoes cannot be deflected by a ship's void shields. Most shields intercept incoming fire based on its speed. Torpedoes travel slowly enough that the shields fail to intercept them, allowing them to pass unimpeded through these formidable gravitic energy barriers. Upon impact, the forward momentum drives the torpedo deep into the hull of the vessel before the warhead and plasma reactor detonate, causing damage far exceeding that of a single lance hit or a macro cannon shell. Of course, such weaponry requires dedicated gun decks and storage areas. On a battleship, Torpedo tubes and their associated facilities are positioned at the bow, making it most convenient to launch torpedo strikes in line with the ship's forward movement. Additionally, the torpedo tubes are commonly located near Nova cannons at the bow of the ship. Only the largest vessels of the Imperium are armed with them due to the substantial recoil. A vessel smaller than a grand cruiser or a battleship would simply be spun around by the force of a single shot. Hence, this already inaccurate weapon requires a stable platform. However, this significant drawback is more than compensated by the weapon's ability to inflict tremendous destruction on enemy ships at great distances. Mounted under the heavily armed bows of cruisers and battleships of the Imperial Navy, Nova cannons have no equals in range and destructive power. Despite various models, a typical Nova cannon comprises an array of powerful gravimetric impellers designed to accelerate a projectile to a fraction of the speed of light. Given the sheer massiveness of the bow-mounted armament, it is no surprise that this section of the ship is nearly uninhabited and consists mainly of gun decks. Additionally, the design of this section of a battleship ensures that in necessary moments, the ship can not only absorb enemy hits effectively, but also ram them. To facilitate this, the bow is covered with high-strength adamantine armor, several hundred meters thick, arranged at an optimal angle to slice through the lightly armored sides of enemy ships, like a hot knife through butter. The side and aft armor is significantly thinner than that of the bow. This is to conserve materials and reduce weight. Nonetheless, the thickness still appears impressive, even accounting for this. The ship is covered by three layers of adamantine armor with a total thickness of several dozen meters. This component of the battleship's defense is designed to deflect direct hits to the hull that other defensive mechanisms fail to stop. However, armor alone is insufficient, as the metal is particularly vulnerable to energy weapon strikes that simply burn through the layers of armor like ice. To counteract this and other types of weaponry, void shields are present on ships. These ancient technologies represent an energy barrier generated by emitters distributed throughout the battleship. When any object collides with this field, it is annihilated, and any focused energy beam directed at it is dispersed. The battleship's force field can absorb immense damage, but it also has its limit, beyond which the shields will deactivate to dissipate the accumulated energy. After this, the shields require some time to reboot. Although this kind of defense can be considered almost universal, it has its weak points. The field is extremely unstable against hits from plasma weapons, whose charges are concentrated masses of energy comparable in power to a small sun. And as mentioned earlier, another weak point of the field is its struggle with slowly moving objects. The slower the object moves, the easier it is for it to penetrate the barrier. Hence, torpedoes can breach the void shields without much difficulty. There's also a nuance with installing such defenses on large ships like battleships. The Imperium lacks installations powerful enough to create a protective field over an 8-kilometer-long vessel, so it must be equipped with multiple generators, which creates complications. Very precise calculations and fine-tuning are necessary so that the shields do not overlap each other. Otherwise, they start to spark and reveal themselves. But at the same time, there should be no uncovered sections, as the enemy will quickly locate and strike these weak points. However, all these drawbacks are somewhat compensated by the effectiveness of the shields. They also have applications outside of combat. Most often, shields are activated while in motion to stop small space bodies such as tiny meteors and stardust flying at high speeds towards the moving ship, which could damage external equipment. Additionally, the field retains atmosphere within itself, allowing for open launch pads for transported spacecraft on the battleship. Anything within the shield's active zone upon activation is cut in half, which allows the shield to be used as a weapon at certain moments. However, a desperate captain must have nerves of steel and unwavering confidence in their crew and ship to execute such a mad maneuver. To do this, they would need to approach the enemy with shields down to the range of the generators and then timely activate them. Such an attack can inflict very serious damage on the enemy. The third component of defense is turrets located all over the ship. They vary in size and power, but serve a single purpose: to defend against torpedoes and enemy bombers that have breached through the void shields. Properly distributed across the surface of the battleship, the turrets leave no blind spots, allowing for reliable fire coverage. And this entire system operates like clockwork from stern to bow. If, however, one were to return from the command deck to the living quarters and begin descending level by level, one would eventually reach the hangars, home to yet another fearsome weapon of the battleship, the assault craft. Many large vessels of the Imperial Navy, the size of a cruiser or larger, are capable of carrying squadrons of assault craft, such as interceptors and bombers. They are utilized in a variety of roles, from small fighters providing protection against torpedo attacks to heavy bombers equipped with anti-ship ordnance. It is known that the largest Imperial battleships and heavy cruisers have launch bays capable of housing up to 2,000 fighters, bombers, and landing craft. The Fury Interceptor is the most commonly used fighter by the Imperial Navy for space combat. Its length reaches between 60 and 70 meters in various modifications. The hull permits full-scale combat, both in space and within an atmosphere. The crew consists of three members: a pilot, a navigator, and a gunner. Occasionally, a fourth member, a psycho-astropath, may be added to provide enhanced communication capabilities. The reinforced hull of the Fury contains an extensive network of electronic systems and life support systems, and even includes a small chemical toilet and a sleeping compartment for the crew. These fighters are typically equipped with several direct-fire laser cannons and starfighter missile launchers. In battle, these vessels form fighter wings, each consisting of approximately 15 interceptors. Adjacent to the Furies in the hangars are the Starhawk bombers. These are larger and slower craft designed for carrying heavy loads, plasma bombs, and armor-piercing missiles for use against large targets in space. The standard crew of the Starhawk consists of a pilot, a co-pilot, a tech priest, who also doubles as an assistant to the pilots, several turret gunners whose numbers depend on the modification, and a logistics officer. The ship is equipped with basic amenities, such as sleeping quarters, a chemical toilet, and even an automated medical unit. The armaments consist of numerous short-range turret defense systems used to repel enemy fighters. The density of their fire is so high that a single Starhawk can create chaos among squadrons of enemy fighters before diving in and delivering a devastating missile strike on the target. In rare instances, Starhawks may be modified to carry and launch a very small number of anti-ship torpedoes. As part of the reorganization of the Imperial Armed Forces following the Horus Heresy, all aviation capabilities and air support within the Imperial military were transferred to the Imperial Navy's Aeronautica Imperialis Division. No regiment of the Astra Militarum, except for the Fantine Air Corps, has access to aerospatial or atmospheric fighters. Therefore now, in addition to spacecraft for space battles, battleships also carry an atmospheric combat aircraft, which provides assistance to the Imperial Guard in ground campaigns when needed. For atmospheric battles, the Lightning Fighter and the heavy Thunderbolt fighter are most commonly used. The Lightning is an Imperial frontline single-seat fighter forming the backbone of the aviation regiments of the Imperial Navy. It is a sturdy, well-armed machine with excellent speed characteristics and maneuverability, powerful nose armament, and underwing pylons for bombs and rockets. The fighter has been in service for many centuries and is highly favored by pilots. However, it alone cannot provide full support to ground troops, as it is not designed to carry a large amount of weaponry. Hence, the heavy Thunderbolt fighter was created. This is an armored, well-armed, multi-purpose aircraft. It possesses good speed, average maneuverability, and powerful nose armament. Additionally, underwing are numerous mounting points for bombs and rockets. In addition, the Thunderbolt can be complemented by the Marauder bomber. These are massive war machines capable of carrying up to 6,000 kilograms of ordnance. Each Marauder has a massive bomb bay and missile racks along the wings, as well as a pair of Las Cannons and two pairs of heavy bolters for defense against enemy fighters. The Marauder is also equipped with vector thrust engines, allowing them to perform vertical takeoff and landing. Some models are equipped with additional ultra-destruction bombs designed for use against heavily armored targets, such as Chaos Space Marines. All this power is housed in complex multi-level hangars, from which thousands of small spacecraft can quickly reach the flight deck. Also, for faster response, pilot interceptor cabins are located near the hangars. The passages from them are arranged in such a way that crews can, at the first signal, unobstructedly reach their machines and take them into battle. Descending along the hangar complex to the very bottom, one can reach the vast cargo holds. In this part of the ship, thousands of tons of supplies intended for the personnel are stored. Unfortunately, the designers of the Emperor-class battleship did not delve too much into the calculations of the necessary amount of provisions and other types of supplies for the entire multi-thousand crew and transport contingents. So even with storage crammed to the brim, the crew has to sit on meager rations to make the food last for a long flight. Sometimes it even gets to the point where the fleet and workers can suffer from malnutrition. Additionally, these storage facilities house thousands of various components and spare parts, as most battleships are ancient vessels and highly susceptible to different kinds of malfunctions. One should not forget about the minimal repairs after battles that the crew can carry out on their own without docking. It is particularly timely to undertake the repair of power units and assemblies located in the engine room, which is situated near the storage areas at the stern of the ship. The engine room is the sanctum sanctorum for the Adeptus Mechanicus, and the second most important section of the ship after the captain's bridge. If the captain's bridge is the brain, then the engine room is the heart. In it are housed three vital installations for the battleship. The first is the plasma engine, the second is the warp drive, and the third is the Geller field generator. The plasma engine is the most common type of engine for void ships designed for travel in real space at sublight speeds. This ancient and reliable technology operates on the principle of the ordinary jet engine from humanity's early attempts to venture into outer space, but is exponentially more advanced. Instead of solid fuel combustion products, the ship is propelled by plasma, obtained from high-power reactors, which are usually an integral part of the engines and are located at the very center of the engine room. The plasma in the engine is accelerated to significant speeds with the help of magnetic fields and ejected behind the vessel. Since every action produces an equal and opposite reaction, the ship moves forward. Plasma engines are efficient enough to allow Imperial ships to reach the boundaries of average star systems within a few days. Imperial void ships use this technology as the primary method of intrasystem travel, including for interplanetary flights, maneuvering in battle, and reaching targets that do not require a warp transition. But, as effective as it is equally dangerous. In the event of serious damage or improper operation, a plasma engine can fail, or worse, explode. Witnesses of such an explosion might think a second sun has ignited. Everything within a radius of tens of thousands of kilometers would be literally vaporized by a stream of superheated matter. History knows many instances when monstrous engines of battleships took half of the enemy or allied fleet into oblivion with them. However, plasma engines alone would not suffice for any Imperial ship. Since the Dark Age of technology, all human vessels intended for long-distance travel have been equipped with warp drives. This most complex installation allows one to overcome the barrier between real space and the immaterium by creating a tear in the fabric of space. This is an extremely energy-intensive process, so the warp drive is always placed near the primary power sources of the ships. The installation itself is no less dangerous than the plasma engine. Its explosion can create an unstable warp rift that will draw in all nearby objects. This, for example, happened in the Battle of Macragge during the First Tyrannic War, when the crew of the Emperor-class battleship named Dominus Astra performed a heroic act. Rushing into the dense ranks of the Tyranids, the warriors of the Emperor deliberately overloaded the warp drive of their engine, leading to a horrifying explosion that created a massive wound in the fabric of real space, into which a large portion of High Fleet behemoth was drawn. However, any travel through the warp is impossible, not only without a warp drive, but also without the Geller field generators, also located in the engine room. It is known that the entities inhabiting the warp are hostile to visitors from the real world, so any attempt to travel through the Immaterium without protection will end in the ship's destruction. To avoid this, these ancient devices were developed. Their principle of operation remains not fully understood to this day, but it is known that they create an impenetrable field around the ship for warp entities, encasing it in a bubble of reality where time continues its habitual course for us and the laws of physics apply. Therefore, the weakening, puncturing, or failure of the field during transit would be a true catastrophe. The energies of the warp and demons would damage the hull and annihilate the souls of the crew. Hence, maintaining the generators in working condition is of utmost priority, especially in recent times after the appearance of the Great Rift. This task has become significantly complicated. A disease called the Geller Plague has begun to spread on the ships of the Imperium. This rare and dangerous disease exclusively affects Geller field operators. Workers infected by it experience strange dreams, convincing them to turn off the generators during transit. At the peak of the disease's progression, those suffering from it merge with the generators into a single entity, turning lower decks into an organic nightmare and seizing control of the ship. Below the engine room and closer to the bow are two more living compartments inhabited by residents of a particular specialization, Void Warriors, who are known by the more archaic name, Voidsmen. These individuals undertake the most complex and dangerous work under the heaviest conditions, such as hull work outside the ship or repairing communications in narrow cable conduits and much more. Most often, those chosen for this position are natives of hive worlds who are already accustomed to life and work in similar conditions. Both these and other crew members spend almost their entire lives on the ship, which would not be complete without one of the most essential elements of life for any citizen of the Imperium religion. The Ecclesiarchy simply would not have allowed its wards to lack the opportunity to embrace the light of the God Emperor. Therefore, on every ship constructed after the Great Crusade, a specifically designed space for a temple was included. On the more ancient vessels, a restructuring was conducted. The size of a battleship allows for the installation of a spacious temple inside, with high ceilings supported by richly decorated columns. The enormous majestic walls of the temple are striking in their opulent adornments, rivaling the most beautiful temples of the Imperium. Although it serves no other practical purpose besides the offering of prayers, this space is mandatory. Most often, it is situated at the spacious parts of the ship, surrounded on three sides by weapon decks of broadside and upper cannons. Below the temple is the lower level. Typically, it consists of the lower deck, divided into several levels of technical rooms, through which thousands of pipelines run, carrying millions of cables. The lower deck is used for technical and operational purposes. Through a massive opening with a diameter of 100 meters, the bulk of cargo is loaded. During battle, it is securely closed with the sturdiest hatch and guarded by heavy turrets. Outside of work, the lower levels can be utilized by the ship's inhabitants for their own purposes. Even on battleships with the strictest captains, these levels can be a separate state with their own laws and rulers. Very often, they resemble the lower levels of hive cities, teeming with criminal elements, cultists, and mutants. There, one can find a black market, where not only necessary items, but also forbidden things can be found. It is likely that every resident of a battleship of any rank and specialty has at least once ventured into these grim compartments. Much can be said about the construction of a battleship, but any account would be incomplete without mentioning a few more specialists who, alongside others, bring this colossal machine to life and lead it into battle. In addition to the regular officers on large vessels, such as battleships, there are specialists responsible for specific areas. The first, and perhaps the most revered among them, are the tech priests. The representative of the Adeptus Mechanicus in the captain's bridge team of a warship, responsible for conveying the Mechanicus's needs to the captain and his officers. Another distinguished member of the officer crew is the Master of Ordnance, He is in charge of managing torpedoes and overseeing combat ships, such as massive star bombers, clumsy assault boats, and agile fighters stationed in extensive launch bays. This chief also coordinates the efforts of the deck crews to ensure that all equipment is fueled, resupplied with ammunition, and ready for launch at any moment. Another senior officer is the Master of Arms. His duty is not only to ensure that all weaponry aboard the warship is functional and ready for action, but also to manage the individuals who are entrusted with bearing arms even outside of combat. Therefore, while directly reporting to the captain, they also indirectly assume a role akin to that of a chief of police aboard the ship. The most prestigious officer position is that of the duty officer. He maintains the duty rosters, assigns watches, and oversees the chronometers of the warship. On most starships of the Imperial Navy, the rank of duty officer is rotated based on seniority. On the oldest vessels, this often becomes a permanent position, granted to the officer who has served aboard the ship the longest. No ship's crew would be considered complete without a ship's surgeon, also known as the chief surgeon, or colloquially, the bone saw. A battleship can host more than 250,000 persons who, even in peacetime, may fall ill or get injured, not to mention during combat, when sustaining injuries is routine. Naturally, one might think that replacing a few tens of thousands of deceased among the multitude of trillions living in the Imperium is not such a big problem, but this is only on the surface because each new crew member must first be trained and prepared to perform their duties. It can take a decade before a recruit reaches the skill level of their predecessor. This is why having medical personnel on any ship, particularly on large ones like a battleship, is indispensable. The medical service is tasked with combating diseases and the effects of malnutrition among the crew, as well as providing aid to those injured in battles. The chief surgeon is responsible for administering the medical staff and maintaining the ship's medical equipment. Besides caring for the bodies of the crew, someone must also tend to their souls. For this purpose, the ship has a ship's chaplain, a representative of the ship's ecclesiarchy, who tirelessly spreads the propaganda of the imperial creed among the crew and promptly identifies potential heretics. This position is elective, with the candidate chosen from among lay preachers, considered the most devout members of the crew. The preacher not only conducts worship services, but also spreads the word of the church among the masses, particularly focusing on the officers, periodically reminding them of their duty to the God Emperor. Assisting in reminding them of their duty is another eloquent member of the crew, the Fleet Commissar. Like his counterparts in the Imperial Guard, the Commissar is appointed to the ship by higher authorities. Working closely with the ship's arms master, the Fleet Commissar ensures that the vessel is always combat ready and that the crew remains focused on fulfilling their duty to the Emperor. This individual has the authority to declare the captain or even the entire crew unfit for service if, in his opinion, they are insufficiently competent or unreliable. Aboard any battleship, there must always be at least one commissar. If there are escort vessels, the fleet commissar will divide his attention among all the ships and the squadron through a series of sudden inspections and drills. So what is a battleship? It is a symbiosis of the ironclad scientific achievements of human thought and the best representatives of humanity working as a single organism. It stands as the physical embodiment of the power of the Imperium, guarding its borders for centuries. Each battleship has a combat history numbering in the hundreds or sometimes even thousands of battles. Captains and crews change, enemies change, but these proud ships continue to fight for the bright future of humanity and will serve it well many times yet. Pages of the Imperium history books are full of chronicles of the heroic deeds of the few. However, it is economies that win wars. When an enemy has billions of soldiers, endless myriads of vessels, their empire consists of countless planets, no amount of personal power or martial prowess can single-handedly turn the tides of war. Where would the Emperor be without everyday sacrifices of thousands of people? Where would Vashtor be without endless multitudes of mechanics and engineers he calls cogs? A careful scholar of history should remember, behind every heroic victory of another admiral, behind every legendary deed of an infamous rogue trader or captain, there are millions of hard-working people that made it happen.